Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks,
where we freaks about antiques.
On today's episode, we are talking about a much anticipated topic.
Funko Pops?
No, not that anticipated.
The death of Queen Victoria?
I feel like we've already covered that. Today's topic is postcards.
Postcards?
Postcards.
Oh shit, that's beefy.
You're the only person excited about this.
I guarantee someone else is. Someone just sat like a little straighter in their chair.
Now, you may be asking, what is a postcard?
You know what? Yeah, actually, let's pretend that I'm asking that. What are we talking about here? Postcard? Card of post?
From Merriam-Webster.com, a postcard is a card on which a message may be written for mailing without an envelope and to which the sender must affix a stamp.
Unlike every other kind of mail. Gotcha. Okay, so wait. The sticking point's the no envelope, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
The study and collection of postcards is also called deltiology.
That sounds way cooler than what it is.
Deltiology is the third largest collectible hobby in the world.
That doesn't surprise me.
Behind coins and stamps.
Of course. The perfect nerd triforce.
Now we must ask ourselves, why is deltiology so fucking popular?
Why?
Thank you, Greek chorus.
Yeah, wait, yeah. Can you like go into After Effects and make it sound like Tenemy said that?
It's funny because I can't afford Adobe.
Shit. Well, shit.
Why collect postcards? Because they are cheap and small.
Just like me. That was going to be my guess.
Unlike many collectibles, they are easily stored and almost unbreakable.
Almost.
You can, like, deliberately tear a postcard in half or, like, bend it. But, like, if you knock a stack of postcards off a desk, they won't shatter into 1,000 pieces like most glassware.
Oh, but the chaos it'll cause.
The chaos. You'll only have all the fun of sorting through your postcards a second time. The worst.
Of course. I misunderstood the kind of person I'm talking about here.
You're talking to a deltiologist.
I'm picturing a deltiologist and they push their glasses up and they like prot fall into their pile of postcards and like, oh no, now I have to sort them again. What a dull afternoon. I guess they're British.
Now, a lot of people collect postcards because they fucking love postcards, but postcards also make a handy addition to almost any other collection.
Meaning?
Because postcards feature images of things that aren't postcards.
You said that so patiently. I don't know how to explain this to you, but they have pictures on them. You dumb animal. Although, I would pay good money for a postcard with a postcard on it.
We will find you one. For example, say you love vintage cars.
I do.
You can probably only collect one or two vintage cars in your lifetime.
Wow, that's being really generous.
But there are many vintage photographs with photos of vintage cars on them. And you can collect a fuck ton of those.
Oh, well, when you put it like that.
And you can store them all in, like, a photo album. And you can store that on a bookshelf. So it's all very convenient, this vintage car collection, suddenly.
Yeah, and then you can pull it out. When you have people over and confusingly refer to it as your family albums with all your children and then just never explain. Never explain.
Fun weekend activities.
It's a good thing.
Or, for another example, say you like highly fragile porcelain figurines of unicorns.
I do. Did you pick that one for me?
Maybe. I may have featured this example sequence around you specifically.
These are all things I like, I realized two examples in.
But small porcelain unicorn figurines are difficult to store and breakable.
True.
And require dusting.
True.
Postcards require none of these, and may also feature photographs of porcelain figures of unicorns.
Oh, I would want one of those.
We're gonna make you a deltiologist by the end of this episode.
Oh, I'd like some. I think you already have.
But how did all this postcard nonsense get started anyhow?
That's a real good question. How did all this postcard nonsense get started anyhow?
The first postcard was probably a prank.
What?
A prank by noted Regency prankster Theodore Hook.
Ah, the man I've never heard of before. Noted prankster. He pranked himself right at history. What kind of a prank? Like, ha, and now you've got mail. Like, fucking bored were they?
It was the Regency. There wasn't... They didn't have Netflix, like, no Fortnite, like, there wasn't a whole lot going on.
But I couldn't find postcards of Fortnite dances. Oh, okay, please tell me more about this prank. And this noted prankster.
So, Theodore Hook, noted Regency prankster, is most famous for the Berners Street hoax.
Okay.
It all began when Mr. Theodore Hook bet a friend that he could make any address the most talked about house in London within a week.
Oh? Yeah, well, I could think of a couple of kill everyone inside.
That's not really a prank. I wouldn't...
Fun prank ideas, murder household.
Homicide isn't a prank, D.
Oh, so you're not going to be wild about when I suggest burning the building down.
No.
Well, you could just, like, piss on it. Like fully nude, just pee on the house, and everyone's gonna be like, yeah, that was the house that Tom Hook, like, he just peed on it, and he was, like, naked, and then he went to jail, like.
So, a week later, in November of 1810, at 54 Berners Street, a very respectable house in a very respectable neighborhood, home of Mrs. Tottenham and her servants.
Okay, all right.
All British names sound fake, I know, but you have to stick with me here.
God let Dickens do a little of the editing for a while, huh?
Funnily enough, I found this story in a book about Dickens.
Tottenham. Well, of course, he would have been attracted to anything called Tottenham.
Mrs. Tottenham and her servants lived at 54 Berners Street. And before breakfast, a chimney sweep knocks on the door and claims that he's been sent for. And everyone in the house is like, the fuck are you talking about? No, please leave. So he goes away. And then dozens more chimney sweeps knock on the door.
Okay. All right.
And then also dozens of coal carts claiming that they're there to deliver coal that someone ordered for this address. And several fishmongers. And at least 50 pastry cooks trying to deliver tarts.
Okay, okay.
And then a horde of surgeons.
What?
And physicians and apothecaries who claim they've all been called to treat a sick person at this address.
Because they heard about all that fish and tarts they'd been eating.
Then a bunch of upholsterers and architects.
What?
Who claim to be asked to the house to do their business of upholstering and architecturing. And then an undertaker shows up with a coffin to carry away a body that he's been told is at this address.
You had too many tarts, I know how it is. Load them up.
And then there are more undertakers.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
With more coffins.
So I wasn't too off base.
And then there are midwives who want to know where the woman in labor is at this address. And barbers. And milliners. And then several grocery deliveries. And then several beer deliveries. And then several wine deliveries.
Are you fucking with me now?
No. And then several ladies seeking gentlemen. And several gentlemen seeking ladies.
I take it so, not in the genteel manner.
In the Lonely Hearts column manner.
Okay.
The thing about London is that its streets are very narrow and not built for the fucking ungodly traffic jam at 6 in the morning that this quickly becomes, because everyone's trying to drive their horse and cart through this street to this address at the exact same time.
So, yeah, not really meant for, like, 4 undertakers and a cart full of pies.
Oh, 4 is a conservative estimate. And then the chairman of the East India Company shows up.
What? Wait a second, no.
Along with the governor of the Bank of England.
I'm sorry, what?
Because they've both been told by an anonymous source that if they want to discover fraud within their own companies, they should come to this address.
They're fucking gullible as shit.
And then the Duke of Gloucester shows up.
Well, he's just having a slow day.
Because he's had a letter from a dying servant and he's come to hear their deathbed confession.
Excuse me? He wants to hear the deathbed confession of someone else's servant?
Of his own servant, who had since moved on from his house.
Oh, okay. What? You know, that actually doesn't explain a lot.
And then the Lord Mayor of London shows up.
What the 8 fucks?
So naturally, all the hundreds of people who are already gathered here start cheering for him.
Woo! Maybe an answer. Why are we here?
And he's so mad that he's been punked this hard that he calls the magistrate to disperse the crowd.
Only now. How many hours had this been going
on? It's been like 12 hours.
Good, so like more than a full day.
Yeah. It takes them until well after nightfall to get rid of everybody.
Just like, okay. So the mayor, the unnecessarily long title, Mayor of London, we'll just say, he just showed up because shit was getting so off the hook.
No, he was personally invited to this address specifically at this time.
Just to be?
Because of reasons.
They didn't even give him a...
Because of reasons.
Everyone else had this, like, the Duke of Gloucester is just like, your servant has something to tell you. Just like, the mayor shows up and is like, I don't know, why don't you come over? And he's like, fine, I guess I got an empty day.
I assume he was so angry at being punked that he refused to divulge the details that brought him there.
Oh, okay. All right, that's fair. Didn't want to be made a fool of.
Too late.
Yeah.
And all this happened because Theodore Hook had spent an entire week writing thousands of letters.
Cool, cool life, Theodore Hook.
Answering every advertisement in every newspaper and making appointments with every profession willing to make house calls, which in the Regency period is all professions.
Say like every single one, yeah.
And then straight up committing mail fraud to get the chairman of the East India Company, the governor of the Bank of England, the Duke of Gloucester, and the Lord Mayor of London to this address on this day, thus making it the most talked about address in London.
Wait, he committed mail fraud?
If you lie to people through the mail.
Is that mail fraud?
I'm assuming. I'm not like a doctor, but I'm gonna call it mail fraud.
That's fair. I can't get over that, like, these people are, like, incredibly powerful, and they got one letter that was like, some stinks over at this house. They're like, I gotta go there immediately myself for some reason.
Presumably he was really good at forging convincing arguments in letters.
He must have been, like...
So our boy Hooks is no stranger to postal pranks.
I guess.
So in 1840, he mails a caricature of the post office to himself.
Excuse me?
The ultimate prank!
A caricature of the post office. I know that there's a lot to unpack in this sentence, but that one's getting me.
There we go. Sick prank. Doc JPEG.
It's definitely sick prank, but okay. Alright, well, what am I looking at?
What you are looking at is a 1840s cartoon of a bunch of post office workers sitting around an inkwell.
Okay, what are they holding?
They are holding pens.
That's okay. And it says penny penutes?
Yes, because the penny post had just started in England, which meant letters could be sent pretty much anywhere for a penny.
So he spent his pretty penny to send himself a funny cartoon?
Yes, because by sending it through the post, he was forcing the post to look at a cheeky cartoon of themselves. Ultimate prank!
Did he commission this?
I assume so.
Or did he?
Although I almost want to believe his art skills were on that level, which we're going to post this to the Facebook. It's a level.
Well, what did the post office ever do to him? Like,
existed, I guess?
Let him, like, stick straight prank so many people. And he's like, I'll get them back for that. For allowing me to commit my japeries unimpeded. Yeah, have this! You look silly.
Bye. So by sending it through the post, he has to make them look at a silly picture he drew of them. And then by mailing it to himself, he now has, through the cancellation of the stamp, incontrovertible proof in his hands that he made a post office worker look at this.
Well, they did nothing wrong. What? That's sick, so much work.
Sick Regency prank, bro.
So much work. And like, what is it? Pranks are at least partially about confirmation. The house prank, I get, you can see that happening and you'll hear about it. With this one, like, did he also, like, creep behind the post office and be like, you have anything to say to me? You goofy fuck. Do you have anything to say to me?
I think he just had his own brand of fun imagining the look on their faces. Oh, how they must have momentarily blinked as they passed this back to my address immediately.
Oh, how they must have scowled for a moment before moving on with their day.
Presumably his sick pranking skills mellowed out over the 30 years between the Berners Street hoax and this incredible prank.
So I've got a question about the Berners Street hoax.
Uh-huh.
Some of those things that you mentioned are like, did he pay for them ahead of time?
No, this was back before lying was invented, so everyone had a lot more trust.
Oh, okay, so he's just like, oh, I trust you'll pay me for these 40 cakes you've ordered.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's okay. Back when you could actually buy shit on credit.
Okay, okay.
Although that you could run up a tab at 8 different funeral homes.
I got a big family, what can I say? I got a big family and a bit of a strychnine problem. But no, but hitting them inheritance powered is a little hard. I can't get over that this guy went through all this fucking trouble to briefly annoy some postal workers.
Listen, they didn't have switches. They didn't have, like, Nintendo Switches. They just had actual sticks to beat your children with. It was a different time.
Which, by the way, my upcoming new, indie game was about hitting your children with an actual Switch.
Jesus. Why?
Because it's, like, because the Nintendo Switch. Because it's, like, a funny joke.
A joke worthy of Theodore Hook himself.
Ah, he would have loved it. He would have, I print that on a card. I make the post office read it.
Well, pranked, my dude.
And then I get it back. So that I can forever live with the satisfaction of knowing that I done did that. Way to go, Teddy Hook. It's almost as good as summoning 10 Undertakers.
Perhaps, ironically, the milder prank had farther-reaching and longer-lasting consequences, resulting in the creation and popularization of postcards.
How?
It's the first one.
What people found out about it?
Of course, he told all of his...
Oh, of course.
He told all of his very cool friends, and they told all of their very cool friends, and everyone was like, oh my god, amazing. Just a picture, through the mail, incredible. Seriously? Let's all do this.
Is that really how it went down?
Yes.
Instead of sending the picture to someone else, which would have, like, gotten the same effect?
No.
Because he could have sent it to a friend, and then the friend would have been like, look at this amusing picture I've received in the mail.
No.
Like, so he just sent it to himself, and he was like, you'll never believe what I did.
Yeah,
it was just this picture in the mail.
Yes.
And they were like, holy shit. Dude, when are they going to find out that you can send to other people?
They figured that out surprisingly quickly.
Lord.
So yeah, the first postcard was a prank.
And what a prank it was.
And now we have Deltiology, so good work, everyone.
Thank you, Mr. Hook. I was a real rip snorter of a comic you sent.
Now, the first non-prank postcards, in the United States at least, happened starting February 27th, 1861, when the United States Congress permits privately printed cards weighing 1 ounce or less to be sent through the mail. And then John P. Charlton of Philadelphia copyrights private postal card.
Really?
They all have a small black border and no picture.
That seems sort of beside the point of a postcard.
At this point, it's illegal to write anything on the address side of the card. Except for the address. That's
fucking stellar.
So you have to write the address on one side, flip it over, and write your actual message on the other side, which means, hey, there's no space for an image.
Amazing. You guys really got the spirit of it going.
In 1870, Lippmann's postal cards reissues Charlton's cards. A thrilling development, I know.
Holy shit. Can't believe Lippmann went off like that.
Can you believe? I can't believe. On June 8th, 1872, Congress approves government-produced postal cards.
Whoa. By the government?
By the government. And on May 1st, 1873, the first government postcard is issued. It only took them almost an entire calendar year to get this going.
It's a fucking square of paper, my dudes. I don't know how they couldn't have made this easier for you.
Again, one side for the message, the other side for the address.
We still haven't gotten a grip on putting pictures on them yet.
Oh, no. Also, only the government-issued cards are allowed to say postal card on them. And the government postcards cost 1 cent to mail, and the non-government postcards cost 2 cents.
Oh, shit.
Double the price.
That's a monopoly.
For a blank square of cardstock. To send through the mail.
I am curious how, like, was this actually more convenient to sending, like, a regular old letter?
I mean, you don't need an envelope. And well, it's cheap, it's one penny as opposed to whatever pennies for a letter.
Okay. Alright, so there was a benefit.
But, yeah, you're right, it's still very stupid.
I mean, like, I'm just kind of, right now my brain is going back to, like, that telegraph message that says, fuck you, strongly worded letter to follow.
It's very much that.
Like, you just need to get... There's something you need to get out there fast and hard.
May 19th, 1898. Congress makes all postcards, government and private alike, cost 1 penny to mail. Well, at last, postcard equality.
Finally. It's all I wanted.
But non-government issued cards have to include the phrase, private mailing card authorized by Act of Congress of May 19th, 1898.
That's a lot of words.
It is. And messages are still not okay on the address side of the card.
Oh, Lord. When will we be delivered?
And now we get the phrase, this side exclusively for address, on the address side of the card.
Oh, good.
Or some variation thereof.
Just in case you weren't sure.
Some cards start to have images printed on them, but they leave spaces on them for a message.
Okay, well, we're getting there.
We're getting there. In December of 1901, we get Post Office Order number 1447.
That sounds serious.
Private mailing card phrase is legally shortened to postcard.
Finally.
Producers of private postcards are no longer required to reference the 1898 Private Mailing Card Act. Messages are still not okay on the address side of the card.
Why is it like this?
The non-address side of the card is 100% image. So at this point, people are literally just sending each other context-free pictures through the mail.
Oh my god, and nothing ever changes, huh?
No.
Because sending context-free pictures is what I do 98% of the time online. Basically, we have lolcats.
You're not that far off.
Why? I get it. Just a quick... Why does American history always go like this? Where it's just like 1,000 incredibly frustrating steps in the wrong direction eternally.
Because America's been stupid for over 200 years.
It just never gets it right.
In 1907, we begin the golden age of postcards.
Could you finally write a message on the back?
On March 1st, the Universal Postal Congress, which is the legislative body of Universal Postal Union, decrees it is now fine to write messages on the left half of the address side of postcards.
Thank God.
Finally, freedom. Sweet postcard freedom.
Sweet mailing freedom to write a message.
The United States Congress supports this decision with its own act, saying the exact same thing.
Us too, actually.
And on March 2nd, same year, so literally the day after, the Postmaster General supports both Congresses with General Order Number 146, which allows private postcards, in addition to government postcards, to have messages on the address side.
It used to be much more simple, huh? It was like a simpler time. I can't imagine... Congress, like if I woke up tomorrow and I checked the news, it's like, Congress says writing on postcard okay!
Oh wait, I'm sorry. Government-issued postcards don't get messages on them until June 13th of that year.
God help me.
So it took them...
they were just really scratching their chins on that one for a little while.
It took them another... March, April... 4 months?
4 fucking months to look at the left of the... Oh, the address doesn't have to be that big, actually.
General Order Number 539 allows government postcards to have messages on the address side of the card. Thus begins the divided back period.
Oh.
Lasting through 1915.
Jesus, Civil War II.
Postcard edition?
Yeah. A postcard divided.
1915 begins the white border period.
It sounds classy.
It's not. World War I happens, which means Americans are no longer buying high-quality German-made postcards.
Were they German?
Yes. They're now buying cheaper American-made cards. Just begins the decline of postcard popularity, because they're just not as good.
The funny images just aren't as funny.
The white border mentioned in the white border period, that was done to save on ink costs during printing, because if you don't print to the edge of the card, you use less ink. Amazing. But they also start adding descriptions of the image on the message side of the card.
What the fuck? That's fucking net zero. Like, well, we saved all this ink. What we should do is waste some fucking time writing, like, some more goddamn shit. It's not for, like, disability purposes, because it's it's not Braille.
Yeah, it's not Braille, and there's no, like, text-to-speech program, IRL, so you're just writing words people can't read on an image they can't see.
There's, like, literally no reason to be doing it, in case, like, I guess unless you send a postcard to, like, you know, simple Sally who has trouble figuring shit out. Like,
sometimes you get, like, postcards of a specific place or event with, like, a description of what the fuck this is.
Yeah.
So, like, sometimes they provide context.
I guess that's fair.
But Yeah.
But when you're talking like wartime scarcity and you're like telling me you're shrinking, like, oh, we saved 3 millimeters of ink, and then just like, and then we just wasted all that ink again writing down like, image of a cat in a basket. Like, stay tuned.
In 1930, we get higher rag content and paper.
Ooh.
Which means postcards look like they're printed on linen rather than paper.
Supple.
Very fancy. We call this the linen period.
Clever.
The most prominent printing company of this time is Kurt Teick and Co.
Never heard of them.
Because you're not a deltaologist yet.
I know.
And then in 1945, we get photochrome technology. Producing the slick, full-color photographic postcards we know and love today.
Oh, awesome. So, like those giant turnips on the truck?
We'll get into those. Okay. Because remember when I said postcards cover an exhaustive variety of topics?
Mm-hmm.
From postcard collecting site cardcow.com.
Good name.
We have an abbreviated list of possible postcard subjects and categories.
The way you're saying that and the expression accompanying it makes me think that abbreviated here is being used somewhat sarcastically.
I just want you to know that I made this list much, much shorter than it could have been.
Really? Let's go.
Advertising. Amusement parks. Animals. Art. Artists signed. Casinos and gambling. Celebrities. Christmas and Santa. Churches. Comic and or funny. Courthouses. Cowboy / Western. A category known only as exaggeration. Which is what Dee mentioned earlier. Literally pre-Photoshop photo manipulations to create the illusion of giant produce.
Yes!
This is its own intensely popular subcategory of postcards. Just giant pumpkins and giant ears of corn, and giant cabbages. For humorous purposes, because jokes hadn't been invented yet.
Yes. Excuse you, Theodore Boot, or whatever. He's weeping into his fucking closed fists right now, because he made some good jokes.
He made the post office look at a picture of a post office. It was incredible. Exposition cards.
Oh, okay.
Which are World's Fair stuff. And not, you know, just, as you know, Bob, this is how our technology works.
2 years ago today.
Flowers and plants. Fraternal, which is code for Masons and or Illuminati.
Oh my god, you said it, they can hear us now.
They can. Pyramid, eye, sheeple, etc. Greetings cards. Greetings from insert place name here. Souvenir cards.
Okay.
Halloween cards, and we'll get more into those in a bit.
Ooh.
But in the meantime, we're going to move on to the more general category of holidays.
Okay. Halloween's one of those, but go off, I guess.
Hotels. Maps. Military. Music and literature. National parks. Novelty. Patriotic. People. Post offices, following our good boy Theodore Hook there. Real photos. Restaurants. Romance and or love. Sports and or games. Swimsuits and or pinup. Transportation. Travel. And universities. Again, this is a highly abbreviated and curated list.
Whoa.
There are a lot of postcards out there.
I can tell. Just the fact that it separated out transportation and travel kind of fucks me up.
Travel is like, I've gone to this scenic locale, check it out, wish you were here. Whereas transportation is, here's a picture of a train.
Okay, thank you.
Now, talking about collectibles on Antiques Podcast.
We do that.
So I know you're wondering, where's the money?
Where is it? Where's the money, Lebowski? Sorry, you rather set yourself up for that.
I've never seen that movie.
Oh, we gotta fix that.
So where's the money in postcards?
Where is it? Where'd you hide it? It's buried?
First, we must understand that value equals rarity plus desirability.
A good math.
This is true for literally all collectibles, but it comes particularly into play for postcards. Because rarity without desirability is fucking worthless. Or, as postcardpost.com puts it, let's assume that someone in the early 1900s took a picture of a small pond and had an actual photo postcard made of it. Over time, the postcard ends up in someone's collection. It is an extremely rare card because only one was made. The question now is it collectible? Let's put it this way. Would you pay $5 for an actual photo postcard of an unidentified pond with no information as to where or when the picture was taken? If you would, please contact me. I've got quite a collection of rare cards of that type.
I like where they're coming. We're just like, would you pay $5 like, Mr. Moneybags over here has $5 for this.
It's worth noting that most vintage postcards are priced between $1 and $5.
Yeah, no, I mean, I figured, but, like, it's still... The condescending tone combined with the low price is, like... Also, just, like, throwing shade on that pond, huh?
Fuck that pond in particular.
Like, yeah, fuck, maybe I will buy it, jeez.
There are, however, a few extremely valuable postcards.
I want those ones.
Well, you're gonna have a bad time. For example, if you listen to our episode on Kewpie dolls...
Which you should.
You may remember a suffragette-themed Kewpie postcard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Most recent asking price on eBay is in the range of $200, but the sold for price is closer to $80.
Well.
Which is still a bit much for a postcard. Like, that is an extremely rare postcard. An extremely historically relevant postcard. And also valuable because people collect Kewpies will also want that postcard. With the tying of postcards into the rest of your collection thing I mentioned at the top of this podcast.
Yeah, which is a big deal with desirability in postcards because you have a lot of groups buying for certain things.
And I haven't even gotten to the people who collect post office cancellations.
That's a thing?
It's a thing, and it drives up the price of certain postcards if it's got, like, a rare form of cancellation over the stamp.
How cool is your life going, huh?
Theodore Hook would be proud. There's also the Halloween cards mentioned. Of all postcard categories, this is the most collectible and most popular.
And most rare.
And most rare, which means that you can find them for up to $150 a piece at postcard shows.
Yo, shit, really that much?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I actually know some dealers who specialize in Halloween postcards, but they do not sell that collection.
It is expensive to be goth.
It's so expensive.
If you learn nothing else from every episode of this podcast, know that it is very expensive to be goth.
Goth is a finite resource.
Goth is a finite resource. But the most valuable postcard of all is Theodore Hook's first ever postcard.
Oh, I'm so glad.
His sick postal prank, which, when it was auctioned in 2002, went for £31,750.
He would have, he's like, I'm picturing a spirit above the auction house with like a tear in its eye going like, my best prank yet.
My best work finally appreciated. But yeah, most rare collectible postcards are priced between $50 and $100, which in the grand scheme of antiques is pretty cheap.
It's really cheap. I was just thinking, like, I wish I was into any collectible where, a white whale would be maybe $100. So I guess that does explain a lot of the popularity. It's a very attainable kind of collection.
It is so easy to get started, and once you get started, it's a very easy collection to maintain, because, again, you don't have to fucking dust it. You don't have to fucking make sure your three-year-old doesn't break it. You just have to put it in a photo album and put it on a bookshelf, or maybe, like, tack it to a wall for display. Like, it's a piece of fucking paper. It's so easy to handle. Another valuable form of postcard is the Pioneer postcard, which is any postcard existing in America before July 1st, 1898.
Why is it called Pioneer?
Because that's generally the Old West era.
Oh, okay.
Pre-1898. I'm assuming. Either that or they were among the first postcards printed. Who fucking knows? Deltiologists. They know.
Yeah.
They have this arcane knowledge. They were mostly advertising for shops and sales.
Oh, cool.
So they're not privately printed postcards for commercial use, or like to be sold for use by consumers. They are printed by shops to market stuff to consumers.
Okay. So like early flyers.
Yes. They still have the writing on only one side because U.S. law still prohibits writing on the other side of the card. And they are worth up to $400.
Wow.
Moving on.
I mean, I guess it's just, like, Old West plus advertising makes it pretty, like... Those are pretty huge collection contingencies.
Plus very old and pretty rare.
Yeah.
Because who the fuck keeps advertising flyers?
Yeah, you know that... While you were talking about it, I was just thinking, like, if I fold up a fucking Costco flyer, like, tomorrow, in 80 years, will someone sell it? Like...
No.
No, absolutely not.
Because newsprint degrades very quickly.
And also, like, I like to imagine the future's not gonna be full of rubes.
We can only hope. Would you like to learn some postcard vocabulary?
Yes, I do.
You almost sounded sincere.
I want to sound hip with the postcard kids.
Here comes our postcard glossary.
All right.
Appliqué. A postcard with cloth, metal, or other embellishments attached.
Oh, okay.
Bas-relief, which is spelled bas-relief, but pronounced stupid because France, is a postcard with a significantly raised surface.
Who?
Big letter.
I wonder.
a postcard showing the name of a place in very big letters that does not have a picture inside the letters.
Excuse me.
Composites. Individual cards that combine to make a bigger picture. Also known as installment cards.
Oh, that's fun.
Court cards are the official size for British postcards between 1894 and 1899. Measuring
wild 5 years.
They were gray. Measuring 115 millimeters by 89 millimeters or 4.5 inches by 3.5 inches. Divided back. We went over this a little already. Postcards with back divided into two sections, one for message, other for address. British cards first divided in 1902 and American cards in 1907.
The crazy 5 years.
Django Fontina.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, we use American in this podcast.
No, we don't. Django Fontina is, quote, a postcard written to a stranger, typically as a means of disseminating poetry. This is part of deep postcard lore, which is also a thing. Call your local Deltiologist.
Disseminating poetry?
Yes. Well, because you can't, like, no one reads poetry on purpose. You just, you kind of have to, like, force it into their hands.
Another thing T. Theodore Hook would have been so proud of. I made you read my poem. Sucker.
Early, in postcard context, means any card issued before the divided back was introduced.
Ah.
Embossed is any card with a raised surface. Distinct from bas-relief because bas-relief is significantly raised, whereas embossed is, like, just a little bit bumpy.
Okay.
Hand-tinted. Black and white images colored by hand with watercolors and stencils.
Aw, nice.
Hold to light.
I will. What fantasy novel have been transported into?
Redwall. Postcards consisting of two layers of cardstock with holes cut out of them to show tissue paper in between. It's typically to make, like, a little picture of a house lit up like Thomas Kincaid made it.
Oh, and it was all covered in, like, spilled beer and vomit.
What? No.
Thomas Kincaid was violent drunk.
God damn it, D. Go listen to the Dollop episode on Thomas Kincaid if you want to know what the fuck we're talking about. Intermediate size. The link between court cards and standard size, measuring 130 millimeters by 80 millimeters or 5.1 inches by 3.1 inches.
Things heating up in the postcard fandom.
I know, right? Kaleidoscopes. Postcards with a rotating wheel that reveals a myriad of colors when turned. So it's basically just a two-dimensional kaleidoscope.
That's kind
of
fun.
Like, postcards can be fun. You wouldn't know from this episode, but they can be fun.
Shush. You.
Large letter. Postcard with the name of a place in very large letters with a picture inside each letter.
Okay, so I gotta get back to big letter now. So it would be a postcard that just said New York wicked big but didn't show you any of New York?
It could have a picture of New York, but not within the letters.
So then, because then it would be a large letter.
Then it would be a large letter.
Who differentiates this stuff and why? Like, I would love to meet the person who, like, the council that got together and just, like, this is important to us for reasons.
Deltiologists.
Okay. Hit me up, Delties.
Novelty. Any postcard deviating from the norm. Cards that, quote, do something, or have things attached to them, or are printed at unusual sizes or in unusual materials, such as leather or copper.
Okay. Would the one that has, like, a mysterious picture of a cabbage count?
No, because that's just a standard size card on paper.
But it does
despite look the bizarre nature of the image.
Okay, that's fine.
Postcardies.
Sounds like a good restaurant.
The style of writing used on postcards. Short sentences jumping from one subject to another, because you don't have the space to write a real letter. Real photographic, also known as RP. Postcards produced by a photographic rather than printing process.
Ah.
We're getting technical. Reward cards. Cards given away to school children for good work.
What a gift.
Can you imagine? I got straight A's. Finally, I've earned a fucking postcard.
And it just says, like, cool. God's watching. Like, I don't know what school was like back then.
Standard size. Introduced to Britain in November of 1899. Measuring 140 millimeters by 89 millimeters. Or 5.5 inches by 3.5 inches.
That's a standard size, baby.
Topographical. Postcards showing street scenes and general views.
A general view.
Undivided back. Postcards with plain back where all space was used for the address and only the address.
It was highly illegal to do anything else.
Usually in reference to early cards, although undivided backs were still common up to 1907.
So not always early. Then.
But never late.
That's always exactly when it needs to be.
Postcards are a lot like wizards.
Yeah, yeah. No. It's not.
Postcard of a wizard?
Definitely.
Vignette. Usually found on undivided back cards consisting of a design that does not occupy the whole of the picture side. Vignettes may be anything from a small sketch in the corner of the card to a design covering three quarters of the card. The purpose is to leave some space for the message to be written, as the entire reverse of the card could only be used for the address.
God.
Right away. Spelled W-R-I-T-E away.
I will, thank you.
A card with the opening line of a sentence, which the sender would then complete.
Oh, come on. Oh, gee.
Postcard Mad Libs.
You need a prompt to talk to your family.
Often found on early comic cards.
Oh, so it would be like, my butt hurts because of... And then it would be like...
Because of the giant cucumber pictured on this card.
Very saucy.
Yes. And that is everything you need to know to start your postcard collection.
I'm going to storm a postcard convention like a boss and just start throwing these terms at them.
Just yelling Deltiology in the middle of a field.
Deltiology, just big letter, big letter. And they'll show me one and be like, that's large letter.
How dare you? How dare you, sir, show me big letter and call it large letter? Do you take me for a rube, sir?
You take me for a fool? You take me for one of Theodore Hook's hapless victims? I would never, sir. So yeah, let's go to a postcard convention and fight people.
Sounds good. In the meantime, you can join our random vintage postcard of the month club.
And fight us that way.
Over on our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks.
You can really show us by giving us $5.
By giving us money to send you a beautifully curated and completely arbitrary collection of postcards.
They are a hoot. If you didn't catch earlier, one of the ones that I mentioned that had a mysterious cabbage on it was one of the cards selected for the program.
It was very good. We were honestly sorry to see it go.
And I pretty much all, if I see an exaggerated size vegetable, it will go in the bin.
Sources for this episode include siarchives.si.edu/history/featured-topics/postcard/postcard-history.
That's not very sexy.
It provided our postcard timeline.
Oh, awesome.
Cardcow.com. If you ever want to look at any postcard ever, they probably fucking have it.
Wow.
Postcardpost.com for that delightfully snippy quote about rare cards. Antiques.lovetoknow.com for how to value old postcards. Collectorsweekly.com, eBay.com, Wikipedia, and The Victorian City by Judith Flanders, a book about simultaneously the city of London and a biography of Charles Dickens, which opens with a description of the Berners Street hoax and only gets more crazy from there.
Wow. Well, now I want to read it.
Do it. She's amazing. If you would like to talk to us about postcards or antiques or really anything.
Giant vegetables.
If you want to talk to us about giant vegetables, you should email us antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com or follow our Facebook page, facebook.com/antiquesfreaks, or join our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends, where we have so many fun images just swirling around.
We got memes.
Probably a lot of fun new postcard pictures going up very soon.
Actually, yeah, I think I posted a really good one for Christmas.
You did a horribly animated mince pie Christmas cartoon postcard. Yeah,
with wine bottle legs and forks for arms.
It was incredible.
Haunting.
You can also follow us on Tumblr, antiquesfreaks.tumblr.com, or you can check out our Etsy at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks for vintage goods, t-shirts, and stickers. And as already mentioned, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks for deleted scenes and to join the Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, where we send you a random vintage postcard every month.
And if I may say so myself, it's fun.
It's a delight.
It's serious. It's like good. It's fun.
You will have fun.
You will. I will find you.
And make you have fun.
I will make you have fun.
And thank you to all of our current Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible, paying our hosting fees, and getting us ever closer to a second microphone.
We're almost there. Gotta figure out the logistics of it. It's complicated, it turns out.
Mixers, eh?
Mixers, eh?
And thank you to you for listening.
And being you.
And being you.
Goodbye.
Bye.